go.
I put on the fancy glasses for today.
Oh, because it's Christmas almost.
No, I knew I was seeing you, and I don't want to wear it for Jopke, but for you, I make an exemption.
Yeah, for the ones who are watching to this podcast or video cast or whatever you want to call it, Jopke is gone.
Oh, I thought you were telling about how the glasses look.
Oh yeah, shame. Yeah, let's look at the glasses. Amazing golden piece. Yeah. I guess gold.
Yeah, it's golden. It's a Ray-Ban.
A Ray-Ban-y.
Yeah, it's relatively cheap. That's how I like it.
Functional and relatively cheap.
Yeah, save up some money for a new synthesizer plugin.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Which one are you aiming for?
Not sure yet. But there are some cool new packs and that I checked out. I like this guy. He's called, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it's Incognet or something. I like what he does, and that's pretty cool. And plus, I saw some serum packs. I don't know which brand it was that I really liked.
Did you see the post on Instagram I put out last week about buying plugins?
Yeah, I think I did, but I can't remember. Refresh me, please.
It's with, what's her name? The football player and what's her name? Victoria Beckham and...
I seen it, yeah. And David Beckham.
And David Beckham, exactly.
Yeah. But
because almost every, most producers out there don't really buy their stuff, as in they use all the plugins, but they just download it. And they all say they do buy it, but eventually they just buy, they just download a torrent or whatever. And
That one. Yeah. Now, yeah, to be honest, that's the thing with, you want to try it out, and I don't like the trial thing. Sometimes it's a little bit. So, poor man, I download a shitload of illegal plugins. And of course, I make a living with my music. So I also, when the time came that I could afford the plugins, I bought them all. Everything I used, I've bought. But yeah. I don't have everything I use, everything I bought installed. Sometimes the illegal ones worked better than the not illegal ones. Probably because I first installed an illegal one, or it's just sometimes it's also hard to install a plugin. They're not all plug and play. It's way better than like 5 years ago or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
So some of them, like even the Dada Life things, my sausage fattener is still an illegal one, even though the guy sent me a copy directly. Sometimes, yeah, I still use the illegal stuff. And I might be even, Silent might still be illegal, but I'm not sure about that one. But I've used it illegally for quite some time, even though I bought it, so it wasn't really illegal, but yeah. So, yeah.
So, talking about plugins, because last week I came across a new AI tool/plugin that someone recommended me, which was Micro Music, I believe it was.
I don't know.
You know that one?
No.
It's a tool where you can drop in a sample of a song. So let's say I'm listening to a song of yours and I like a certain sound in a certain part of your song. I just take that part of the song, the full song, drop it into that AI tool, and that AI tool replicates all the synths that are in that part of the song. And it instantly makes presets for, what was the plugin again? Vital, I guess.
Okay. To be honest, I don't know Vital.
I think it was Vital, micromusic.tech. You should check out. Yeah, Vital. It's some sort of synthesizer-ish
plugin. But it sounds really, really, really interesting. So what was the name?
Micromusic.tech. And there's a video on the website which you can check where he does that with Animals from Martin Garrix and one or two other songs.
Oh, I was thinking you were saying where he does it to Animals. Like, what the fuck?
But obviously, like, the algorithm is trained by a million songs, I believe, and it can also do polygonic sounds, as in multiple layers. And yeah, if you listen to it, like, it's ridiculous how close it gets, as in
that's really, really interesting. And then because AI is a little bit creepy sometimes, because wait, my phone is, oh shit, it's going berserk, but people can wait. The thing I don't like about AI is especially all the separate tools, you never know what they are going to claim copyright wise. But usually it's also, every tool has their legal document uploaded. It's quite a hassle to check them all. I used a lot of AI tools for vocals, but some of them claim copyright then. So it's kind of a slippery slope. But this, what you describe here, can be really, really useful, as now you see a lot of covers surfacing on Spotify. And if you want to release something as a cover, you have to replay all the instruments that are used. You cannot use anything of the master recording, because then you have to clear the composition and the master recording. So that's a hassle. If you replay everything, you only have to clear the composition, which is a lot easier, because there are also less parties involved. So with that in mind, it's really interesting, if you want to do a cover, that you can upload some parts of the track and have it all replayed by what you just called
micro music.
Yeah, and that's really interesting. I'm actually now thinking, okay, shall we just end the podcast right now so I can check it out?
Yeah,
that's how interesting it is.
No, it's really like the cleaner the sound. So if you have a break, for example, where you can hear that certain sound on itself on standalone, the easier it obviously gets for the plugin, for the AI tool to replicate it. But it can even do it with, like, having the beats and everything in there, you know, like it can just dissect the whole song. And
yeah, that's really insane. Like, it's quite a hassle, because if you also look at our account, and for the ones that don't, check us out on TikTok, Instagram, shameless plug right here, go do it. And Bass Checkers is the name, BASSJACKERS. And now check it out, and you can see we were doing also a lot of covers. I really have a lot of fun with doing them, and some of them are really popular. So then you're going to look at, like, okay, can we release this either as a full cover or clear it? And then if you're going into the process of clearance, you have to replay everything that's used. So when we make a bootleg, we use the original synths most of the time, and or we just got samples from the original. We just use the original master of the original artist. And then if you want to release it, you have to make the cover version, and it's quite a hassle. We sometimes even pay other companies who are better at replaying stuff. Like, we have the Happy Together song with Dimitri Vegas and Like Mike. The whole part of the, it was the Turtles, I guess, who did the original song, So Happy Together. And they replayed that. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Huh. Yeah, it's now actually Happy
Together. As in, is that one, the Happy Together?
Yeah, that one.
Is that Turtles? Oh, shit.
Yeah, the Turtles. Yeah, I was not mistaken. I know my shit. And
I don't know the upper ski version.
Well, ours is also really usable for the après ski. No problem right there. And and then you have to have it replayed. But man, I'm not capable of replaying something the Turtles did. So then you go to special people who can do it, but you have to pay them quite a lot of money, and rightfully so, because it's an expert thing to replay that whole thing. They really did a really well job, but it's about thousands of euros if you want to have that replayed. Yeah,
but isn't there like, I'm sure it's already out there, but I haven't seen it yet. But like an AI tool that brings Melody into MIDI, so that you can just like get the MIDI file out of it and then connect.
Oh yeah, but then you have the MIDI, but then you have to replay you have to reinvent the whole sound.
Yeah, okay.
The hardest part, because we did Mask Off by Future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being picked up really well and it's gaining a lot of support. So we're now looking at releasing it. But then we have to, it's a sample from a really old song. We cannot use anything from that. So we cannot take the same road as Future did. We have to replay the whole thing. But I tell you right there, that's where my capacities are limited. I cannot replay that. Simple.
But does that have to do with sound design, synthism?
Yeah, well, they used an old sample from an old, really old song. It's really hard to recreate that.
Okay.
But if there's AI tools that can help there, but then they shouldn't rely on the original recordings, you know? That's where you have a gray area, because who says... they have a million songs in their database. They always draw something from existing work. So that's where it's a little bit tricky.
Yeah, I haven't checked the legal work behind it.
No, but yeah, of course, it's our business and we want to release good music, obviously. Well, we actually want to present a really good show, and sometimes that also takes unreleased music that will never see the light of day. But yeah... if you have a cool track in your set, you also want people to go to be able on Spotify to check it out.
Yeah.
We also get a lot of questions about that. But then you have copyright and other mechanisms at work. And that's where it gets interesting. Also the AI, that's where it gets interesting. Mm. And yeah, tricky. Yeah.
Aside from, you're not using this tool yet, but are there any other AI tools you guys already use for music production?
Yeah, only for a lot of vocal stuff. A lot of vocal stuff. And
then just have it made from the start, or?
Yeah, well, I use this app called 11 Labs.
Mm.
And what I do there is I upload certain outtakes of certain people, all copyright free, and that's where you can make new stuff out of, and then you can make your own pre-drop vocals. And we also used other stuff like Fake You, where we used our own vocal to sing, and then you can alter it into anybody you like, famous or not famous. And
is that the one that, was it Gedda used for Eminem?
Yeah, oh man, there's loads of guys. You can use Tupac. Yeah, it might be, I don't know. There's multiple sites, multiple apps that do that. But Fake You, that's definitely not something you use for official tracks, because they have a really strict copyright policy. I mean, you have to upload your shit onto the net. It's pretty verifiable when you upload it there and you use it in a track that goes on Spotify. You get rights claimed. Effed.
Yeah, you can swear in this podcast.
You're fucked.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I also saw a video from I believe it was Sick Individuals last week where
I saw that too, and that's an interesting one you're bringing up. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, no worries.
Because I don't know how they do it, but that was interesting. That's actually the same as I do. But they do it through ChatGPT, and
I didn't know ChatGPT could do audio.
I didn't either, and that's why it's so interesting, because ChatGPT, they don't claim any copyright, so that's copyright free. That's what makes ChatGPT so interesting.
Hmm. Okay.
But yeah, you can also use DALL-E in ChatGPT, which we actually do when we upload shit to SoundCloud. That's where we make our that's how we make our artworks.
With DALL-E.
DALL-E in ChatGPT. Don't use DALL-E directly, because that's shit.
Yeah, but you know what's funny? Like, I constantly get questions from artists like, I don't know how to make artwork, you know? And a year from now, or a year ago, or maybe 2 years ago, I used to say, go to Fiverr, pay someone $20 and let them design your artwork. Yeah. Well, now all those things are almost free to free.
You have to pay a subscription.
Yeah, for ChatGPT, like the one you're talking about is the paid version. Yep. But there's also like a lot of free tools that you can use. You can even use ChatGPT to create marketing plans or to create like a storyline for your release or to come up with new song titles or...
Definitely, but ChatGPT 3.5 isn't as capable as 4.
Yeah, that's why you have to pay for it.
Yeah.
But still, like if you look at it, how quote-unquote easy it has become to do all these things.
Yeah, but to be honest, I think the strategies and all that work, that's the simple part of being in music and do marketing.
Mm-hmm. The hard part?
Well, that's actually doing the work, creating the content and having the patience of it to work, because it's always you're always enlarging the chance of success, but it's never a guarantee of success. So sometimes even me or other guys, you just get frustrated because why doesn't it work? I did everything right, but then it's just the time and place that's not right, but you don't control those. We're content factories, you know. Music is one part of the mix. It's one of the biggest and the most important ones, but yeah, the rest also comes to it, but it's never a guarantee of success. It's always an enlargement of the chance of success.
Yeah. I was listening to a podcast this morning about that exact point, and I think that just that keeps intriguing me in some kind of way. Why the hardest part of anything in life is keep doing it, as in staying motivated, you could say.
But that's definitely true.
Yeah, but it's so intriguing to me that what everyone knows is, you know, it's not like it's a secret or whatever. You can read it in any book, in any podcast. It's not a secret, but why is it so hard for people with all these tools available that can make building your career so much easier?
But it's always a level playing field, and it's about competition as well.
It is.
One does better than you, then you're again fucked.
Yeah, still. If you would release one song every month for the next 2 years, and if you put out content 3, 4, 5 times a week for the upcoming 2 years, I can't tell you how far further you would end in your career, but I can tell you one thing, your life will change.
Definitely.
And what I keep thinking is so interesting is we know this, and why are not many people doing it? Because it's hard. You know, it's hard to show up in the studio every day.
No, that's also, it just depends on who you are. And social media sometimes demands you to being someone that you actually are not. And that's where it becomes hard. And I mean, when you're an introvert person, it's hard to take out your phone and go, hey, blah, 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 and this and that, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And you can see it a lot. And then it's forced. But also, take us for an instant. The whole concept of being a DJ has altered so much in like 10 years. Mm-hmm. Because before, people were just judging you on what you would play and how and where, and if it would stick to a crowd. But now, people want to see a lot more. You have to entertain. You have to think about how you stand, how it will come across on video, and how that video would
perform.
Yeah, perform on the socials, you know. Oh, people will definitely interact with this, so let's do that in my set. And that's, yeah. And you've seen it like with little steps evolve. Eh? It didn't go from left to right instantly. When we started
like
at first, 10, and you still remember.
Year. Yeah, well, like a 10, 15 year progress, right?
Hey, but when we played Club Noah in Leeuwarden, for instance, you've played there, we've played there. You didn't pick up the mic at all. You just played your set. You would pick out good music. You actually have the records go for like, man, a record were about 5 minutes long back then. And then it just... The records became shorter. You had to pick up your mic. the attention span grew shorter, and it just went on. And we had to add every time something to do some interaction with the crowd. You know, you had people standing up on the decks, people doing weird signs, WW, laid back Luke with his thumbs. You know,
yeah, like this.
Well, yeah, we're all busy trying to entertain. And then Steve Aoki brought it even a step further with the cakes, which is mega impressive, because have you seen him throw? He's a sniper, man. It's insane. And some didn't like that. Some do. And because you don't have to conform, it's also about being the artist that you are and just go on with it and endure, even if the market doesn't want you to be that person, you know? And yeah, you always have a choice to comply or not. But that's something me and Marlon talk about a lot, because I see a lot of cool artists. I like WW and Layback Luke to make the signs with their hands, you know? They're not touching the decks. They're not being a DJ at that point. No, they're entertaining. Mm-hmm. And I like that. I like how Will Sparks has his moves, you know? I like Steve Aoki. I like Dimitri Vegas and like Mike with all the crowd control. It's all different. And then I also see now the new hard techno DJs. I like Sarah Landry. She just, man, she's just all emotion. And then I see other guys like Nico Moreno. They have their act, you know, and just fits really well. And it's all really different. They don't take up the mic. They just do their shit. So that's also a pretty fine possibility to do.
So how do you guys approach it as, let's say, dinosaurs in this industry? Because you've been in it for like 15 years, 20 years. You came
more
from
like 15.
Yeah, 15. So you came from a different time.
Yeah.
How do you mentioned you guys talk about it all the time. How do you stay authentic, so close to yourself?
No, but it's exciting. Every time I see people doing shit, I actually get excited when I like it. That's how when I see somebody do shit that I like, I also want to do that shit. Yeah. And
but do you instant copy it, or do you try to find a way that works?
You got to try to make it your own, because, I mean, if somebody else does this, I see Will Sparks as his moves, you know, he turns around in a matter. It's really cool. Yeah, you don't. But you will see for yourself. Is there a move I usually do? Maybe I should emphasize on that, you know? I like
what is what's Marlon's?
Oh, yeah, no, he jumps on stage and then he has this leg move, which is, I think it's really impressive. And when he jumps off stage, it always, I don't know how he does it, because he's not a big guy. But man, he can jump. And he has this leg move, which I always enjoy seeing when he does it. And it's also for me a sign that he really enjoys his set then. And he kind of acts goofy. And I also think that's the cool thing about a lot of DJs that I like. When they start to do these goofy things, it's actually a sign that they really are enjoying themselves.
Because, or they're drunk. When they're comfortable.
Yeah, I think you then forget about your shit and just be, I mean, the first dance you do at a party, it's like, ooh. And then at some point, everybody starts dancing and we all forget our shame. That's when we start enjoying ourselves. I think that's also for a DJ.
Yeah, that's true. So once you feel comfortable, your guard gets down and you start to loosen up a little bit.
Yeah. Or like I said, when you're drunk.
Yeah, but that's what alcohol does in most of cases. You know, it just removes the boundaries.
Yeah.
That's why.
No, but to get back into the original question, I really like that there's a lot of movement in this scene and market. I think it's exciting. There's always something new to do or to discover. You cannot discover everything yourself. Yeah, you see stuff and then copy it in a way that it will be your own eventually, and to make it your own. But it's cool to see people doing different stuff and trying different stuff. But exciting times. And I also think whether you are in marketing, in finance, in governing, I don't know what, everything just evolves. You nothing stays the same. That's the only certainty you have. So you should think about, do I want to evolve with the world I'm in or not? That's also perfectly your choice. You're free. Mm-hmm. You're a free man or girl. Do it as you like. But yeah, there's always the certainty the world changes and you have the option to change with it. And yeah, I like it.
Okay. Perfect. I know I had a few questions about music marketing and promotion, but I think I'm going to take that to next week because I think we should talk about that longer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have some questions from the Discord.
Yeah, me too. Listening. How have you changed the last couple of years, Joey?
What? How I've changed?
Yeah.
Oh, as a person or as a company?
Both.
As a person, I became a lot more self-aware, as in I obviously worked a lot on myself after quitting DJing, which is almost 10 years ago.
Whoa, dude.
Oh, no, it is 10 years ago, by the way. I'm 35. It's 10 years ago.
You're old, man.
Yeah, I'm old. But so let's say 9 years ago, I started working on myself and I actually never really stopped. So that really changed me. Obviously, I became much more self-aware. I started making much more conscious decisions. I have a balanced life at this point. I like my work, but I also like being at home with my kids and with my girlfriend.
Yeah. Do you feel like you're in a continuous process of change?
Yeah, constantly.
Yeah, okay.
Because every time you kind of feel like, oh, I kind of have the perfect balance right now. And then 1 week later, you're like, fuck. And then you need to rebalance again. So it's always something, you know, and that's why I love what I do. Because I talk to a lot of artists about these kind of things, I also can reflect those things on myself constantly. So whether it's about self-security, whether it's about financial things, whether it's about life goals, business goals, personal goals, I believe you should be on top of those things constantly because life changes. Constantly, as you mentioned. And what works now might not work a month from now or a year from now. So you constantly need to keep your finger on the pulse to, yeah, rebalance every time. And if I look at my life right now, I'm definitely happy where I am. I definitely changed. And I can also look back to how, well, unknowing and insecure I was as a DJ. Which I never really realized in the process, but now looking back at it, I can say,
oh man, in hindsight, when I look back at myself, I go, whoa.
I actually sometimes I wonder, like, how the hell did I manage to keep doing this for 10, 15 years? Like, as a kid, as a little kid, because that's what you were at that time. I was 18 years old. And if I look at an 18-year-old person right now, imagining that that person needs to travel the world, deal with all those fans and pressure. And
hey, imagine being their parent, dude.
That's the second layer that's been added. Now that I have kids, I'm thinking about that. Like, okay, what if my daughter came to me in 10 years and said, okay, I want to become an influencer or I want to become a rock star or whatever. I would definitely support them. I would definitely support them because I think it can be a wonderful profession. But what I do believe now, after let's say 10 years of research, becoming famous, it's so hard to do that in a healthy way and to stay grounded, and it's so tough. I think that that's the reason why you see a lot of artists struggling at a high level or just completely collapsing at a high level. Yeah.
But I do also see a lot of them doing really good at a high level.
Definitely. Yeah. And I do believe that there's definitely in the future, there's a lot more help that's coming.
It's because there's no taboo in getting help, you know.
Yeah.
You get a personal trainer, you can also get a personal coach. Why not?
Exactly. And I see a big trend there as in, well, that's my job. So I can see that there's more demand for it from younger ages. So that's a good sign to me. So people are more into the preventing business instead of the curing business.
I always was the, you know this of me, I was always a little bit skeptic about all these coaches and all this shit. Then I started talking to you every now and then. I was like, man, this guy actually knows his shit. Changed my mind about the whole thing. And now sometimes I say to people, you know, for you, this situation would be good to talk to a coach.
It's just that the word coach has this big stigma around it. And I personally hate it as well.
To be honest, I get the stigma because there's a shitload of coaches and there's also a shitload not capable. So you have to look through the weeds to get a nice plant.
Yeah.
Is that a saying or did I just invent this? What's up with that?
No, but it's true. And if I look at my life, that's definitely something that changed over the years, as in I just adapted my life to my values and to my needs. And I'm just living a comfortable life, as in a lot less pressure, a lot more happy, a lot more time. Every time someone asks me, like, how are you doing? I just always think, like, I always say, like, I'm doing well, but I always think, like, I am doing well, you know? Like, there's literally nothing I could mention, like, this sucks or this needs to be changed.
Yeah.
And that's because I'm in the mindset of, as soon as I notice something needs to change, I'm going to change it. Otherwise, it's going to kill me in the long term.
You're not going to wait till the 1st of January.
No, but that's the thing. Most people say, like, oh, yeah, in the new year, I'm going to quit drinking or I'm going to
stop. Did you also post that or did I see that somewhere else? I did see it somewhere else. Yeah, I also don't get it.
What was the post?
Huh?
What was the post?
Yeah, so this was just, I'm not waiting to the 1st of January to change my shit. I don't know what. But I totally agree. Yeah.
But that's a certain mindset that you have to adapt because for most people, they procrastinate on everything. You know, if it starts with working out, you know, like, okay, oh shit, I need to work out more. I want to become healthier. Yeah, I'm going to do that from January 1st.
Yeah.
Well, we all know everyone subscribes to the gym on January 1st and unsubscribes two months later because
they don't unsubscribe. I mean, starting a gym is not a bad business idea.
Yeah. You have like 80% head sponsors and no shows. That's perfect. But it's all about procrastination and kind of it's that first little hump that you have to go over because once you got started, once you're in the gym, it's not that hard anymore. But it's going to the gym that's hard.
The first ingredient of success is just to do something.
Show up.
Do something.
Yeah. Exactly. But why is that so hard?
That's because all the things why we started this whole conversation, emotions basically. Yeah, if insecurities, shame, ego, whatsoever, that's all withholding you from, we started out by talking about socials, but that's what's keeping a lid on things. Because if I go with my selfie status, blah, 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 my friends see it, my family, when you're not successful, they laugh at you. That's how it is.
Yep.
Hey, the best thing is when you're like at the zero fucks given point. But that's also dangerous because then...
That's where I am.
No, but you can become rapper shorts as well, you know? like a caricature.
No. Yeah, but you should stay some sort of grounded. But zero fuck given is a good thing, has a good thing.
Definitely,
in it,
but... yeah, it's a weapon. But man, sometimes I'm also that guy that goes like this. I'm like, man, what I'm doing? Yeah, that's not me. And I also recorded this video. I wanted to show off a track that I just worked on it and I was really proud of myself and I thought like, this is a cool track. I want to have people hear this right now. So I recorded myself and then I made these hand gestures, you know, and when I look back at it, I was like,
I saw that.
It's a good track, right?
Yeah, but I was thinking the same thing, like, that's not Ralph.
No, but I was looking at myself like, man, what am I doing? I'm not that TikTok clown, but... At the moment, it felt right. But I was looking back at it, but I'm also like, whatever, dude. And
exactly.
Yeah, but made me feel a little bit silly. Yeah, sometimes I see shit of myself back and I'm like, what the fuck? Maybe I never listened to this podcast back for good reason,
Ralph. Me neither, but I think it's about the whole thing. Like, you know, it's not it's not a bad thing to make mistakes. Like maybe you could call that a mistake. You thought that might work or whatever, and you did it. You posted it, and now looking back, you think, I don't know. That's okay.
It's also whatever, because 99.9% of all the people just don't even think anything about it, you know. But it's all yourself making. It's you making yourself crazy.
Yeah,
and
it's all
seeing shit that's not really important at all. But hey, people actually reacted really well on our TikTok is actually going pretty cool. I really like the game we do, and it's working. You can see the progress. Everything gets more. I also like talking on it. I like to comment on the comments. That's the thing. It feels like Inception, but whatever.
Paradox.
Yeah.
How is your? Are you using YouTube Shorts already?
Yeah. Usually, me and Marlon, we post on the socials both, and it's not in Marlon's system yet. But I sometimes tend to post as something you post it on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube Shorts.
Yeah, you should definitely start doing that because I do believe that for 2024, a lot more traction will happen there.
Yeah. I don't like the interface. It's not as swipeable as... Yeah, TikTok's real easy. Yeah. I really like Instagram as well. I'm more on Instagram myself than I'm on TikTok.
Mm.
But
you should really get more into there, as in you get a lot more organic reach on Shorts. So if you would post a video like that, like how you made a song or if you're making a new song, that might perform much better than a video that you've worked on for 8 days, you know?
Yeah. No, I always try to also, the thing about socials, what we try to do is, it's just what we do that we post on there, you know? It's me in the studio and it's Marlon on the stage most of the times, and sometimes it's some goofiness in between. But it's what we do is actually really honest content. It's really what we do and who we are and what we love to do most.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not me at home being with the kids and all that stuff, but that's also something I don't want to share. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with showing kids every now and then, but it's not part of me on the socials.
No,
but this is, that's the passion. The first marriage I have is with music and music production. And that's what I really like to show. And that's what we do. And if you just keep it really honest, then actually doing socials is not that hard. The only frustration is that it not becomes successful all the time.
Yeah, but that's also something you kind of, you shouldn't look at as in, it's.
I agree,
it's
but you do because you're human.
Yeah, because you have emotions, but eventually it's all about the compound effect. So that if you keep posting on TikTok for the next 2 years, 3 times a week, you will get more reach, you will get more followers, you will get more fans, but you shouldn't let yourself be stopped by people who start bashing you or mentioning that you look stupid in that video or whatever.
Or my English accent.
Oh yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I post on with artist coaching as well, like it's always the first comment, like, I smell Dutch people.
Well, yeah, it's mostly because of me, because I think Jopke has a pretty good accent. And you too, to be honest. But
yeah, but I think for a foreign...
you can hear.
Speaker, you can definitely hear that we're...
German scientists.
German. Yeah. German English.
I always like it when Toto Wolff starts talking in the English. It's, it sounds like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
They're both Austrian, so...
Yeah.
Hey, there's questions from the thing we should do, huh? Because
exactly.
Time is running out.
Yeah. Is it realistic to ask a label to get your master rights back after so many years?
It's a good point. Oh, you can. Well, I think labels are... You should approach them as if they are criminals. Be wary of them. But the thing is, if you've never released anything, you're going to get a hard time and you got to sign some shitty deals. I think it's insane when they ask for eternal rights exploitation. Should be like 20 years max.
Mm.
For me, a frustration is when you put out a track and it doesn't do well, the labels, in our case, it's usually 12 to 15 years, they have the rights to exploit it.
Mm.
But they won't do shit after 1 year if it tanks. They won't do shit after 4 or 5 weeks when it tanks.
Yeah.
And then I tried to incorporate some mechanisms that would give the rights back after a year or two when it doesn't tank, and when it tanks, when it just flops. But they don't do it because that's their model of sometimes a track does a cool sync or something after 3 years and then becomes a big hit.
Mm.
And they don't want to run the risk of not getting that money. I mean, it's a business in the end. Mm. Yeah. So I actually, I disagree with the music industry, but, yeah, I've seen so many artists also disagree. And when they start their own label, they do the same shit because running a label is also, a little bit expensive.
Yeah. So is it realistic? Yes, but it's going to get hard to do so.
The bigger you get, the more you can demand. But when you're going, when you're really big and you go to the majors, let's say Sony or something, man, then you will get a really shitty deal. But it's a shitty deal over a lot of numbers.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's always, they are the gatekeepers. They have the power still in this day of age.
Exactly.
But you can always say, fuck you.
You can always go for a do-it-yourself route.
That's true. That's, it's not total power. The people have gained some power in the recent years, definitely. So that's a good good thing there is. And but some labels do actually good work also. And if you make good appointments and your expectations are right, then you can work really well together. But yeah, I don't like the rights part. That's for me always a little bit of a thorn. But yeah. I cannot change it. I've tried, people. I've tried.
But no, but if you look at, there's this great documentary on Netflix about Spotify called The Playlist. And if you look at that documentary, it's all about fighting against those companies to get the rights for the music to put it on Spotify, right? That's the holy grail for labels, the rights, because that's what they make money on in the long term. It's their compound effect. So yeah, I think it's possible, but it's going to be very hard to do so, I guess.
Definitely, yeah. I don't know if it will ever change, to be honest.
Well, I think, with labels, it might not change because it's their earning model for now. But what I do think is that, as you mentioned, the power is kind of shifting a little bit more into the middle, where the power is going back to the artist again. And you also have the option to say, fuck you, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You see a lot of acts that don't stream well and don't have the following on those stream sites or on the Spotify's or whatever, but they do really well. They're really cool festival acts. They really have their own fan base that they can sell out venues. And yeah, if that makes you enough money, you can always say fuck you to a label or start your own one.
Exactly. And
because that's also a thing, when you get big enough, you can carry your own success. I think if I would be like really big, for me, the money is not always the drive. I actually do have some principles at times. And
that's nice to know.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I think a lot of musicians don't, they're not the most principled people. Mm. I don't blame them because that's not the business we're in. And I mean, we make music and do entertainment. But still, yeah, sometimes, yeah, we're all different as people. Yeah, I never wanted a Ferrari. So, yeah, if I have to say no to a big label and don't get the Ferrari, then fuck it. I'm fine with my BMW.
You're privileged, fuck.
I'm so modest.
Yeah.
No, but okay, yeah, sometimes it's weird when you see big people or even like the big footballers, they're maybe a more illustrative example, because I think I would never play a small competition when I could play a bigger one for more money. Yeah. How cool is...
unless it comes with a lot of downsides, as in if that big amount of money means that you will become super famous and you can't really have a private life anymore. Like, I don't know.
No, but I would never choose the money. It would always be, yeah, just, yeah, of course, if you want to play a smaller competition, yeah, for me, it wouldn't make sense to do the one for 30 million and the other one for 50 million. I mean, I would do both for 30 million. I would just do the thing I really want, you know? And that you don't see usually when Cristiano went to a smaller competition, and it's his fine right, but he got like an insane amount of money, and I'm like, dude, you already have so much. Is this really what you want? I cannot look inside his head, but yeah, then do it. Maybe he really wants to lift up a competition, which is actually pretty cool. I think it's Saudi Arabia or something. Where is he?
I'm not a football fan.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But in the Middle East, I believe.
Yeah. But it's cool to see, to get some shine on different leagues than the ones in Europe, for instance. But yeah, for me, it's always, yeah, of course you want to play Premier League, you know, it's the highest out there. But yeah, I cannot look inside the ads, and I'm not operating at such a high level, so what do I know? But sometimes you think about it. Dreams.
Okay, next question. Should a music producer or artist look into relocating to a city or country where their targeted genre is big in? Does that help?
Why not? It works for Silicon Valley.
What could be a reason to do it?
Well, if some certain genre gets played a lot in a certain area, it's easier to get shows and make flying hours. So, and also to find like-minded people that do that same. It's cool to meet not like-minded people, but also sometimes it's hard when you don't have them around you. If you're the only one that's into dubstep, yeah, then you're gonna get a hard time. No parties for you.
It's more about becoming part of a community and building a network, which is doable online. Like, you have Discord,
definitely,
you have places
where
you connect. But I do think, I used to believe the latter, as in I used to believe that you could do it over just digital. And I still think that's possible. But I do think that relocating has some sort of advantage, because human connection and meeting people in real life still is more meaningful than just...
Well, in Holland, you had Junkie XL as a big example. He moved to the States to become a film composer. I don't know what. Yeah. He's now in the team of Hans Zimmer. Quite a name. And but I think you cannot do that if you're not in Hollywood.
Exactly.
Or it will be very hard, to be honest. Harder.
Could that be a reason why a lot of Dutch artists, well, Dutch DJs mainly, are so successful? Because they all live close to each other and there's a good...
We had this discussion before with a lot of people. I always think that we had so many clubs in such close proximity that you could do 3-4 shows in a night. So you can really practice your craft and become really good at it. You can do trial and error so much more than any other person anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I mean with the flying hours. And we could road test so much. And that's when the invention started, you know, all the bleeps and all the shit.
True.
And then people, and then when you were talking to each other, because we would run into Hartwell, Afrojack, Don Diablo, you name it, all in the same night, all in a different venue. It was insane. And then you went there, you saw Nicky Romero, you went Sydney Sampson, and all these big guys who brought the Dutch sound abroad, bingo players, everybody, you saw them everywhere. And that's why this circle, it went up pretty fast, and all the innovation and all the stuff. I mean, Hartwell Studio is only a 20-minute drive from me right now.
Yeah, exactly. Same for me. Like you're 20 minutes away, Hartwell's 20 minutes away.
It's insane. Firebeach is next to you.
Firebeach is like 20 meters away.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy if you think about it.
And yeah. I think that's, being in close proximity really helps. Nothing beats being with each other in person.
True.
Digital only helps.
It's not the same. It's a tool.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely helpful. Man, me and Marlon tours all the time. If we wouldn't have FaceTime, I would never talk to him.
Write letters.
Yeah. Oh, there comes the pigeon.
Yeah, exactly. Ralph, I must say, we did a good job.
Yeah, we can talk.
Yeah.
And I hope the people liked our, in Dutch we call it gezeven. I don't know what the English, mumble jumble.
Mumble jumble, I guess, yeah. But I hope they do, because the next 3 weeks will be this. So don't expect a lot.
No, when are we back on air?
With Jay, you mean?
Yeah.
I think he was gone for 3 weeks. Or maybe even a month.
Yeah.
So we could look for. Are
we doing next week also in between? I'm here. Although Wednesday is the birthday of my mother. It's the 20th right now. Yeah. She's the 27th. Yeah.
Otherwise, so we could record another day as well. It's no problem for me.
Okay.
We might be able to find a guest for one of the upcoming shows.
Yeah, if somebody now listens, tell me which guest you want. And it must be reasonable. Yes, we can call Martin Garrix, but the chance he will appear is less.
I could check with Danik, maybe.
That's cool. Maybe I like him.
I'll check with him. Cool. For everyone listening, if you're not part of the Discord yet, make sure to become part of the RS Coaching Discord, because that's where you can leave your questions for the podcast.
And
where
for all the latest bootlegs, go check out Instagram/basecheckers. Subscribe. Press the button.
And then we'll be back next week with a new topic. So everyone have a nice Christmas. Enjoy your time with family and friends. And we'll talk to you right before New Year's Eve.
You know how they say Merry Christmas on Hawaii? I'm not sure if it's Merry Christmas, but there's this Christmas song that goes like, Meleke Liki Maka is a thing to say. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. It's a cool Christmas song. You can check out Boss Christmas, my playlist on Spotify. It's Boss everything Christmas. You need for the Christmas.
Boss Christmas.
Boss Christmas. BOSS-Christmas. And it says, who's the boss? You are.
Let's go. See you next week.